Hey, I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
Thank your group for inviting me here today and to Dale for extending the invitation and getting the scheduling done. My sobriety date is June 20th, 2006, and I'm here from the Interaction Group in Richmond. My job is to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I don't know, I guess the best starting point for what I was like is I was just never felt fully integrated into life, never felt like I knew as much as other people, never felt comfortable, like had some friends in school and stuff. But just even with that, I always felt kind of on the outside of whatever group I was participating in or thing I was supposed to be doing. And don't know where that came from. I just know it was with me from day one. Part of that, I attribute it to, you know, the place I grew up. I mean, the area you're in looks like a metropolis compared to it. I'll put it that way. I thought a lot of this being uncomfortable in life just came from being out of that remote rural area and just not understanding how things work. One, and two, there was something I knew something was wrong in our family, but I had no idea what it was. All I knew is if you knock mom's coffee over, you're going to get backhanded and go sailing across the kitchen. And the whole thing with her was very unpredictable. She's a woman that never missed a day of work, a big, powerful woman. She worked in the post office when the big, heavy bags of mail came in. The little postmaster would send mom out there to get them off the truck because she could handle them better than he could. But when she came home, she'd have that glass sitting on the back of the kitchen sink and a bottle of gin underneath the sink. And I don't really have a great feel for what it was. I know it was a lot of nights. I don't know if it was every night or most nights or at least every week or whatever, but it was a lot of drinking going on. And you never knew what it would look like. It was just very unpredictable. Like one night she could be start drinking and she'd be skipping through the house singing. And then it would turn just like that. Next thing you know, you're running for your life because she put some brutal beatings on us. You know, I mean, people talk about, you know, today you don't go in on the kids with the corporal punishment and all that. This was more like Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier. I would be Joe and I wouldn't have allowed to swing back. And see, that's part of these unspoken rules in the family that some of them I was aware of and a lot of them I wasn't. But anyway, just all that craziness going on. You know, as far as alcohol, I really I didn't start drinking a lot in school. I remember in the eighth grade sneaking out at halftime of a basketball game with some guys and drinking. I didn't really get drunk. I just liked the excitement of doing something we weren't supposed to be doing and then hiding it from my dad on the way home and then going camping with some guys later. And we had and a few of them broke out some beers and we drank those. But when I was 16, I would say was my first real drunk. My girlfriend had just broken up with me and first keg party I'd ever been to in my life. And that stuff was just going down like water. You know, all that angst I felt over the embarrassment and all this stuff over breaking up were just melting away. And then I'm throwing up. I've got people walking me up and down the driveway, trying to sober me up. And finally, people are driving me home. And even with that, I like the whole thing. You know, I'm cracking jokes on the way home as bad as I felt. I said, somebody in here smells like vomit. And I said, yes, you. And then the next day around school, there was a lot of buzz around everything that happened. And I was mentioned in there a couple of times. And I like the notoriety of all of it. But mostly I hung out with the athletes, you know, I played football, I ran track, and in the off season we were all together lifting weights, and they were my guys, and then junior, senior year, probably one of them started to have a bad influence on me, and a guy like me, it wasn't a tough job for him, but so I started drinking a little bit more, and then My junior year, this tractor tire had blown up in my face. I was in a shop talking to a guy who was pumping up a front tractor tire, and the thing blew up. Blew stuff in both eyes. Went to the Petersburg, an hour away, got it all picked out. Thought it was done. Several months later, this one of them started hurting. When I worked construction during the summer, started hurting. So go to the doctor. Got some kind of a bacteria in it that they have nothing to treat it with. There's only been two cases of it in the country before. So I was in Johns Hopkins up in Baltimore the whole summer, and then finally they just like grafted some thin skin over it and sent me back to school. And kids were very understanding about that. They nicknamed me, Cyclops right out the gate. And you know, just so I started drinking a bit more. So I got depressed. My grades went down my junior and senior year. And, you know, it's time to figure out what you're going to do with your life. All my friends are going off to good colleges and I can't get in. So I'm Virginia just come out. I think that was probably one of the very first years of the Virginia Community College system. So I went to the community college and, anyway, just started drinking more. I never looked at it as a big deal. I had like weird stuff happen. One night, I'm driving home with my girlfriend, and the lights go out on the car. Just no lights whatsoever. Couldn't. I mean, I'm drunk as I don't know what, you know. And so anyway, I pull into this driveway, and I'm knocking on the door to get some help. And I look over at the other part of the driveway where it curved around, and there's a car with a big star on it. And I'm knocking on the sheriff's door to get help with this situation I'm in. And I mean, no human could have looked at me and not known I was drunk, much less somebody in law enforcement. He said, "Oh, I know you. You're Herbert's boy. I'm going to turn my lights on and you follow me home." And that became a kind of a theme in my life because it was in the late 70s and 80s. It was much more lenient back then. And so I got away with just weird stuff like that a number of times. Anyway, finally and at this point I could still rein my drinking in. It was getting more severe, but when push came to shove, I could still rein it in and get some stuff done when I really had to. So I had basically straight A's for these first 2 years in college, could have gone to a lot of different schools. And this is where part of what I like to get across in my story is the alcoholic mind that I wander around with. Like, I don't think about what I want to do as a career or what my interests are or what you know, major that would put you into or what school you would go to. All I know is I had three older brothers. All I know is Kevin's leaving Virginia Tech and his apartment's open and I can go in there. So that's where I applied, went on up there. And first couple of, we were on a quarter system. So first couple of quarters, I did pretty well. And then my roommate and I got to know each other too well, I suppose. And so we switched from studying to drinking, and we had a drinking event for every night of the week. I mean, you know, tall boy Budweiser's on Monday night football, and the 7-Eleven wasn't that far away. You only had to go over one little hill to get there. I came flying off that thing in the snow one night and tore myself up in the parking lot, but no big deal. Went on back to drink. So bleeding on the sofa. I'm drinking. So I became what I would describe as a heavy drinker among heavy drinkers. I joined this thing called the Cave Club up there. And we were very serious cavers, and that was a dangerous sport. And we didn't get drunk while we were in there, but once you got up the rope and you're sitting at the pit, if you didn't have a real assignment to help with anything at that point, you'd start drinking. And that carried on driving back into town, and it would carry on that night. And then, you know, we had a keg every Friday night, and usually we'd have a keg or a party somewhere on Saturday night, and that would carry on into Sunday morning. We'd get up and finish off whatever was still around to drink, whether it was part of a keg or any liquor or whatever. We could find some tequila that didn't get polished off the night before, so that'd help you get over the hangover Sunday, and then you could like comfortably drink beer the rest of Sunday. And I would drink basically anything. Kroger had a beer called Wiedemann's you could get for $1.89 a six pack back in 1980. And you had to drink it fast. Once the Wiedemann went flat, that stuff was just horrific. But I drank it with cigarette butts in it. What do I care? So yeah, I drink some liquor, but mostly I just love beer. It started back during those summers working construction with my dad. We'd be riding home, it'd be whatever. But three carpenters and a couple of us helpers in the car, and we'd stop and get the little Pony Millers. And Dad and these old carpenters are throwing these things at once they were empty. They're throwing them at these signs out the window like they're 15 years old. And I just thought this was all great stuff, you know. So I don't know, just kind of got introduced to it as something that was fun and a thing to do. And the drinking just went up and up. I drank so much up there at Tech. I mean, I would barely be standing up. But somehow I was just determined to fight through it. I mean, I didn't always make it. I passed out a lot. I vomited a lot. We had a guy in the home group. He ran with this gang in Richmond as a kid. If you threw up in the Big Hat Boys, you were a chump. I said, I would have been the biggest chump those people ever ran into. I was throwing everything up. And but yeah, so I had that going on, and then I'd get these letters from the dean saying, "Well, we're going to kick you out." So I would tighten it up, cut my drinking way back, and then next quarter stuff like this would happen. Here comes Perry. I'm at home studying for exams. I had to crunch study at the last minute because I wasn't really applying it as I went through the course. No method to it. I'm just The pressure's on, and I operate with a lot of stuff in life like this. For whatever reason, I don't move until I'm about to get squashed by something. So anyway, pressure's on. Here comes Perry. I'm studying for statistics or whatever. He's like, "Want to go down to Cowboy Superman?" I said, "No, Perry, I'm in here studying." He said, "Come on, you got to go." I said, "All right, you talk me into it with that second line." Go down there, it was after Urban Cowboy came out. Every bar now had a mechanical bull in it. So he says, "I'm gonna ride a 10 if you ride a 6." So I got up there and rode a 6, and this thing like twisted my back badly and came flying off of it. And so I was lightly injured. And then Perry's gonna get up there and ride a 10, and he's drunker than any human should be. He turned that thing on his head, go pressure right off the saddle, and couple of them went over and lifted him down. But I would be out, and I didn't know what was going to happen when I started drinking. They classify alcohol as a depressant drug. To me, it was rocket fuel. Like, man, all the shy, introverted kid from Lunenburg was gone. I nailed, like, I'm going to yell, scream, fight, chase girls, break furniture, whatever you're up for. I'm more than up for it, and I'm going to double or triple it. Go downtown. I'd get mad at people at the bars and walk home 7 miles or whatever it was. Just stuff like that. Walking by the bank, I decided I need to pull two of their what 8 foot tall trees in these planters. Had two of those going up the sidewalk when the police reel me in. So this went on, and I finally graduated with this econ degree. I don't even know what you were intended to do with an econ degree or why I was in it, but now I had one. I put my usual planning and analysis, analytical skills onto it, and a solid, thoughtful plan is what we're going to have here. said, I think a lot of economists work in Washington. I'm gonna head up there. So I go up to Arlington, move in with my girlfriend's sister who was living up there. And then I'm getting laughed out of all these, you know, Bureau of Labor Statistics and all these places. I came pretty close though. I finally got a job managing a little office for a basement waterproofing company. And so I was over in charge of, I forget, it was four or five salesmen I'm suddenly in charge of. I mean, I've worked in tobacco fields and on construction. I don't know anything about managing a salesperson, but here I am. And they didn't like me, and I pretty much hated them, is how that went. But then it rained and snowed for about 21 days straight. And every basement in Southern Maryland, D.C., and Northern Virginia was flooded. We went from getting, you know, five or six calls a day. It's now we're getting 60 calls a day. These guys are yelling at me to get the best leads out and sort through this stuff. And one day at lunch, I put my keen alcoholic mind on it. I said, these people did not train me well. They certainly had no emergency planning for this flood we're under. So I was boxed in the parking lot, but I was in my pickup. So I drove across the ditch and got on wet one. Went on down the road, didn't say anything to them. It's like, yep, that's their fault. Shouldn't have done that to me. Shouldn't have put me in that position. And this is the level of consideration I had for people. The book says we're an extreme example of self-will run riot. And when I look back at myself in sobriety, there's no other way to view that. The owner's son called me up. He says, you got to come back. And blah, blah, blah. I said, no, this is all your fault. And this is why, blah, 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 blah. And then I go home and get drunk because I feel, I don't admit that I'm at fault. I just know I don't feel right about what's happened. So I go home and get drunk. So anyway, ended up going back to Tech because they had this program. You could get another degree in a year or whatever it was. I didn't have the grades to get into graduate school. So I go back, moved in with the statistics professor. So that was helpful with expenses. And plus she made a much nicer mom than the one I had before, I thought. But she was like the total package, mom, girlfriend, housing, all in one. I go out with my buddy down the hall. We're out getting drunk, out all night. I don't know what this woman thought, but anyway, she tied into a real winner. We got all that stuff going on. So I get out with pretty good grades. Graduate and I get a job down in Chester, just south of Richmond, with this little chicken auditing company. Because we'd go to these little chicken production plants all over the southeast, southwest, you know, Fort Smith, Arkansas, Lufkin, Texas, whatever, Montgomery, Alabama, North Florida. Just unattractive places to travel to. I'd have to go to Alabama on the Super Bowl every year. And every year I'd go, man, I forgot this is a dry county. I'd roll the rental car up to this convenience store. And like, you can't buy any beer in this county. I'm like, well, what county can? Oh, winning over there. 90 miles an hour over to the next county to find some beer. And then I'm trying to work to where I can get back to Richmond and do the bar hopping on Friday nights. So I just stay up and drink beer and work on our, we had the first portable PCs they ever made, a company called Compaq, and the things weighed about 40 pounds, but you could bounce them down an airplane aisle and it wouldn't hurt. So I'm up working on this thing. I quit going to the ice bucket. That was eating up too much time and I was tripping on too much stuff. So I finally just started drinking the beer warm. And I think about twice I actually finished the audits early enough to get back to Richmond for the Friday night bar hopping. The rest of the time I was just too hungover. And it was just one weird thing after another. I'm going out with women in these offices that I shouldn't have been doing. I'm out drunk with the controllers. I'm just a fantastic representative of this little company that was kind enough to hire me. Just wake up, blackouts. My first sponsor asked me if I ever blacked out. I said, No, you know, this is whatever, a few weeks sober. I'm thinking about it when I really got sober later on. I'm like, I blacked out all the time. What was I thinking? I don't know why I couldn't bring it. I don't know why I couldn't dredge it up when the guy asked me. I wasn't trying to lie to him. I didn't believe it. It's weird how delusional I'd become. That goes on, and finally, I'd been applying for other jobs. Well, meanwhile, they had trained me up to go back to the management of these chicken companies and present the studies we were putting together. And so I've become the quickest person in that company ever to get approved to go back and do the management presentations. And I'm scheduled to go do about eight of them. And meanwhile, out of the blue, this job offer on some resumes I put out comes in, and I just go in there and said, I'm out of here. I said, well, we got you scheduled here. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, look, this is your fault. Do I really need to explain this? You didn't train me right. You had me down here in these smelly plants and processing plant feed mills and chicken this, chicken that. I'm out of here. Anyway, so I go to work, and I actually will fit in very well there. You know, I grew up in the country. I really related to these people in these companies we were going to. And then the next place I wanted to work for, everybody dressed in three-piece suits, and it was just very rigid and very formal, and I felt like a fish out of water. So I spent 7 years in this place. And every day I was smarter than everybody in that building. And every day I was so afraid that would be the day I got fired in there. And I did. Going back to that chicken job, I'd been in there about 2 weeks, and we decided we're going to go downtown and get to know each other. So it's about me and seven other auditors. That was the whole company, basically, other than the two or three top people in there. And we go bar hopping down in Chaco Bottom in Richmond. And I am drunk as a human can be. I'm like, I do not intend to go out in front of the office mates and get drunk like this, but I'm just drinking it up. I'm like, well, I'll get by okay. They won't notice. And finally, leaving this last bar, I come out, I fall into the parking meter, but I held myself up. Then we go around the corner and we're walking up a fairly steep hill, and I started to get tired. And I look over and there's a car parked right there. I said, I'm going to take a little nap under that while I'm going by. So here go the seven guys up the sidewalk, Kent peeled off and gotten under this car to take a little nap. And I can hear him say, I think I see his feet back there. I mean, this is where my alcoholism takes me. Anyway, I'm in this new company. I'm worried I'm going to get fired. They did away with our department I was working in, but my buddy had already moved over to another department. So I go over there and I beg this guy to help me. To get me a job, you know. I said, come on, man, let's make a job and get it approved. And we finally did that. And I thought Robert was the worst boss ever. I said, this guy's a control freak. He won't let me implement all my great ideas. I could be turning this company around if he'd turn me loose in here. Now, Robert would go out and we'd knock down three tall beers at lunchtime. That was the only redeeming quality I could see in this guy. But you know, I didn't go talk to Robert about any of this. I just went to the VP that he reported to and said, Robert doesn't know how to use an industrious, super intelligent guy like myself. And I get transferred over to another department. And then I ended up working for an alcoholic there. They made this guy get up in front of the whole company and tell everybody he was alcoholic. He'd gotten sent to rehab over and over. Finally, they made him get up. And this is the level of understanding that society has about alcoholism. So the parent company gets bought out, and I've just worked over into a new section of it, been there less than a year. And this massive layoffs, and I was one of the lucky ones. One, my wife just had a kid two whatever it was, 2 or 3 months earlier, I've survived the layoffs. I should be extremely grateful. And they came to me the day before I was supposed to start the new job. They said, well, we want to see you work in the new job for 6 months before we give you the title and the money that comes with it. It's just, you know, kind of a political thing with corporate. We got to get through. Don't worry about it. I don't know if I didn't understand what they were saying. I had to understand it. I mean, you know, but I'm just bent out of shape over it. I am so twisted up in my head over this stuff. I'm like rounding up people, taking them out to happy hour every day to discuss what's happening in there and the injustice of it. And finally, one day, my boss is coming in from lunch, and I'm going out to lunch late and as friendly as any human could be. He said, good afternoon, Kent. I said, F you, Phil. And look, this company had paid for me to get an MBA over 4 years of night school while I was working for them. I should have been set. I should have been had a career path really for the rest of my life. I look at it, I could just call it alcoholism. I was so full of fear that I just like lashed out over something that didn't even exist. Just a problem that wasn't even wasn't even, you know, didn't exist in reality. And I freaked out over it to where I've told off somebody. Well, it's no longer the tobacco fields and construction sites. You don't get to tell people at corporate off and get away with it. So they got rid of me in a couple of months, and so I better put my keen alcoholic mind on it, think of what I'm going to do next. I was at the babysitter's one day. She said, you ought to go into real estate. I said, well, where do I look into that? I know a guy. I go talk to the guy. I'm like, yeah, I'm going into real estate. Look, I've hated salespeople my whole life, and now I'm going to be one on the advice of this babysitter. I'm 34 years old. You would think I'd have better sense, but it did turn into a decent career. I'm still doing it. And I had it, and I had tremendous, I still had a lot of drive, you know. I call it alcoholic drive. I don't know any other way to explain it. Most people couldn't do what we do and drink as much as I did and puke your brains out and get up and do it again in a couple of hours and do it again the next day and the next and all that stuff. So I put that alcoholic drive, started knocking on doors. I knocked on 300 doors a week, which most people just are not willing to do. So I take over a couple of neighborhoods and the business just starts coming in. And I get drunker and drunker. I cannot handle the good or the bad in life. I'm a kid that, you know, I work basically for free on our farm. And when I worked for the neighbors in tobacco, I got $1 an hour. And now I'm making like $20,000 to $30,000 a month here in 2006 when money's raining out of the sky in real estate. But going back a little bit, somewhere along the way, I'd become a type 1 diabetic. And that had some neat alcoholic thinking applied to that, and emotion and fear and all that junk that I've lived with for so long. And so I go in to get, because of that, I had to get another eye surgery going back to that thing that happened when I was a teenager. I go to get a physical. The doctor walks in. He says, how long have you been diabetic? And I look around the room. I'm like, who is this guy talking to? And then I figure out it's me, and I'm just angry, which to me stemmed out of, I look at it now, I go, that stemmed out of fear. And like, guy's a quack. He's working in, you know, today they call them patients first. They have very good staffs operating there, and I go there a fair amount. Back in the day, they just popped up. We called them doc in a box. If the guy was any good, he wouldn't be working a dock in a box. Just to prove that I knew what I was talking about, and he didn't know, I went across to Hardee's and ate 2 big breakfast biscuits and went on home. Food doesn't bother this guy. And a couple of months later, I had lost 50 pounds probably and could barely walk up the 3 flights of steps to my apartment. I said, well, I better go down to MCV and get this checked out with some real doctors. The guy says, well, you need to start on insulin right away. So we talked about how we're going to do that. We talked about exercise. We talked about diet. He said, how much did you drink? I told him a little bit. And he said, well, if I were you, I wouldn't drink anymore. And he sprang this on me as I'm coming down off the table. I stopped in midair. I'm like, what, not any? He said, well, you could have a beer, but drink any more than that. And I'm just almost mad at him. I'm like, who would drink a beer? And I did what any good alcoholic would do. I just walked on out. I said, okay, like I'm all on board. And then I walked out. And I'm in a panic. So I start going around. So what's happened is I've got this series of divorced and single guys around town because I've now got three kids at home and I can't drink at home as much as I need to in order to calm all this noise down up here. So I'm going around to these guys. I said, the doctor said not to drink anymore. I go, what are we going to do? A couple of them came up with a great idea. They said, can't just smoke more marijuana. And that's where I kind of went into treating alcoholism with marijuana. And that became totally insane. I could not get enough of it. I'm like, I would use that stuff to where I couldn't get an effect from it anymore. I'd be disgusted with myself. I'd throw it out the window. This is 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm done forever. And then at 6 o'clock, I'm thinking, well, that was a little severe. I had a maybe think about it. And then I get my flashlight and I go back out there on the highway and start looking for the bigger chunks of it. And I would find it. And then I'm like, and then these young kids I'm getting it from don't want to see me as often as I need to come by there anymore. So I've got to start. Well, fortunately, my friends didn't lock their houses up or it would have been breaking and entering. I was just entering. And I go in there and I just stuff my pockets full of this stuff. And the same thing over and over. Just ramp up. Get disgusted, throw it away, go track it down again. I mean, I don't mean to do this stuff. I'm driving to work. I'm dressed like I'm dressed now on the way to work, and I've got a list of what I'm going to get done today. And next thing I know, the car is turned and going up to one of my buddy's houses. I pulled a super can over to a 9-foot privacy fence. I jump up on that thing, jump over the fence, knew the dogs. I pat them down, get them calm. Put a 5-gallon bucket under this guy's big window, get back, hit that thing with a running start, go through like Superman, just like you're looking at now. And then this guy had a little path through every room, and he had trash and music instruments and just, I mean, stuff stacked up this high, and then you had your path through, and then you had all these snakes in there, and I hate snakes, but take on a snake. If the situation called for it, I was going to take him on. Well, I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, but fortunately, I never had a problem. I mean, they wanted to, I'm going to pay out of pocket to go to a couple of IOPs because I don't want a medical record that says I have a problem with drugs or alcohol. And meanwhile, my brother-in-law had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm looking at this guy going, oh, my God. Here's Phil, who's gotten sober in AA and wants me to go. He has lost his mind. This guy's borrowed money from me. He's lived in my basement. My wife has been up to clean out his apartments here and there and everywhere as he's getting kicked out of programs and out of housing. And I'm like, oh, Phil's come up with a solution to life. Great. And then one day I looked at him after he was into this thing. He's probably a couple of years into it at this point. I said, what in the world has happened to him? He's like a different human standing in front of me. So I got in the car and went on out there. I figure it's going to be Phil and a couple of guys from under the Lee Bridge in trench coats. And, you know, and it's like 75 people when they open the door. And it's everybody under the sun, you know, painters and carpenters and accountants and the whole shooting match. And I related to all this stuff they were talking about. I said, I had no idea anybody was struggling with this the way I am. And people were going through all this weird stuff, not going to drink on this day and that day. And that drinking never left me. I mean, I went to a housewarming party. And that night, I'm just going to have a beer from the keg. So I get that red Solo cup, and I filled it up. I didn't really leave the keg. I just... and I put it up, and that stuff went down like water after you crawled across a desert. I said, well, I'm going to obviously need another one because I was thirsty. I lost count around 24. And then I wake up, somebody's punching me, and I don't know why. I mean, I didn't wake up. I'm standing there in the kitchen. This person's slapping me. Like, I need to leave before I embarrass myself. Drive home in a blackout, then the wife punching me. Why do you reek of alcohol? Only had two. Anyway, never had a problem. Wanted me to go to some of these IOPs I was paying to go to. Finally want to put me in-house treatment. I'm like, I got a car right there, knucklehead. I'm not going to in-house treatment. I get in the car and I'm drunk on the way home. And so that's going on. I tried extreme exercise. I talked my doctor into putting me on Zoloft. I tried a half dozen rock and roll churches. I tried acupuncture, meditation, you name it. I'd be drunk leaving the parking lot of most of these things. And I'm in AA. I can relate to people struggling with trying to control this stuff. But I'm simultaneously looking around the room going, well, why does this guy weigh 300 pounds? Why do they've lost their family? They don't have a car, blah, 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 blah. And so somehow I decided I wasn't as bad as that. But I wanted to do it. I'm going to 5 and 6 meetings a week. First sponsor had me going to a set schedule of 5 meetings a week, and I went to all of them. And I was sitting in the back drunk at a lot of them, which is, that's got to be the most miserable thing. I mean, I've known some people that have like come to AA and not gotten sober for decades. And I'm like, God, it's got to be the most painful existence there is. But anyway, I went through 3 fifth steps with 3 different sponsors. And this is where whatever is wrong with my mind trips me up again. I go, I'm going to lose my real estate license if I do 9 step amends. Well, I've never harmed anybody in real estate. I was an excellent agent. That's the truth of it. I came into it with construction background. I'd taken all this business law in school. I've got finance degree. You know, I'm a great agent. Other than I drink now and then, but don't call me after I've left the appointment at your house. Let's put it that way. Which I tell you a story about that. I had to smoke in order to get calm enough to go to these appointments. And then I would take a lot of antihistamines and drink a lot of water and put in the eye drop, the clear eye drop, so people wouldn't know I'd been smoking, but I still stunk because it would be on my jacket. And then the car is all full of it, you know. So I go in food line one day, and they got these things in there called lemon wipes. And I said, well, that's interesting. And so I cut one open there in the store. I said, wow, it's got a powerful lemon aroma. So I put a case of them in the car. And then I just had to do all my thing, my water, my antihistamine. And then I would get a handful of lemon wipes and put the wipe down on, and I finally blistered my face with those things. And I'm mad at the lemon wipe people. Why didn't they put a warning on the package? Well, bump, 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 Mr. Lemon's here to list your house. Well, I don't know why they didn't list with me. But, anyway. Yeah, so I was in AA. I couldn't make any sense of it because I never finished the steps. As a result, I never got rid of the obsession to keep driving me back to drink against my will. I signed up for a home group, but I never actively engaged in one and did anything in one. You know, I had sponsors, but I did the minimal possible with them. I didn't call them when the obsession to drink came on me. And so at the end of 3.5 years of this, I said, if AA worked, I wouldn't still be drunk. So out the door I go. And in the next 2 years, all this insanity just got worse and worse. Finally, my neighbor intervened on me one day. 2006, money falling out of the sky in real estate. I've got a crew of guys over putting 2 big patios on the house. My neighbor was a 30-year naval man. He retired as a captain. If he came in a building the size of this church, everybody in it would jump to attention. That's the, you know, the status of captain in the Navy. He's pretty serious dude. Very nice man, though. He says, Kent, what are you doing? Well, I want Don to like me. I want Don to know that I'm doing a big deal over here. I'm improving my property. I'm probably bringing up Don's property value. I said, Don, he's grading it down 3/4 of an inch coming around that corner. So and so and so, but Don didn't look impressed. I said, I better put another one on Don. I said, Don, you see that guy with that canvas bag and he's squirting that stuff? It looks like cake mix. I said, Don, it's not. That's mortar. Well, this man was this far from me when we started the conversation. He's now this far from me. And he yelled as loud as any human could. He said, Kent, you'd make a lot more sense if you didn't smoke so much dope. And it snapped me into reality. It snapped all this delusional thinking and delusion, denial. He got it all in one blow. I go slam my rake down. I go walking in the house. For a second, I go, I got to go back and talk to Don and explain this stuff. And I couldn't do it. I just sat him in a chair. I said, I'm done. And when I did, this warm thing just goes down through me. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about it or trying to figure out what it was. I get on the phone. I call this guy I met before I left AA. And I said, hey, would you sponsor me? And he said, well, let's meet and talk about it. I said, no, let's just do it. What do you want me to do? And so I went out to his house in Ashland every Saturday morning until we got through the step work. As soon as we got through that, he said, now go down to city jail and get cleared to go in there. Go down there next week and start the clearance. I said, Mark, I've never been arrested. I said, they wouldn't relate to me in there. He said, you're alcoholic. They're going to relate to you fine. About 70 or 80% of them are alcoholics. So I started doing that stuff. And suddenly, and just a bunch of other stuff like that, we'd go to the emergency room down at MCV. If somebody said they had wanted to talk to somebody about a drinking problem, they'd call our home group, and we'd run down there before they discharged them. And going to Veterans Center, we were going into a couple of IOPs. We were going into Tucker's in-house treatment facility there attached to Chippenham Hospital. And what it did is it just put a power into AA and gave it a purpose that I'd never seen or understood before. All this stuff about Joe is now going to talk about surrender. I already know what he says. I've already heard it 3 times this year. Like, why do we keep sitting here kicking the same slogans and same shares back and forth? I couldn't make any sense of it. But when I did this stuff, and you're like, yeah, if I don't come out here to this prison, these guys aren't going to have anybody help them with this stuff. And so it just put a whole power into it I'd never experienced before. And so that went on for 10 years. And then I got in a little tiff over something with them. And that was tearing me apart because this place was my family, you know. I go riding my bike down the hill, a mile and a half hill from my house going down towards the river. And my first sponsor still live down on this road, and I whip it in there. I'm going to talk to Joe about this group blowing up because I can't get over it. And he says, Kent, not every two people were meant to be in a marriage together, friends together, in a business together, or in a home group of Alcoholics Anonymous together, and that's okay. And when he said that, I just knew it was true, and all this angst and everything just dissipated, and I went and started a group, and that went on for about 4 years, And when that fell apart, I intended to go identify another home group of AA and get right in it. And somehow that didn't happen. I'm like still calling my sponsor once a week, regular on the same time. And I go to a couple of Zoom meetings a month. And other than that, I'm not really attached to AA anymore. And everything has suddenly started to become a big deal again. And I'm getting angry and all this. And I go to list this house. I didn't go to list a house. I went to take over a triplex. I was going to manage as a rental for this guy. And it took a long time to look at all the units and look at all the leases. And then we're back in his house reviewing all this stuff. I don't know the guy from Adam's House Cat, but we kind of hit it off. We're talking about bikes and solar power and all this stuff. And on the way out, I'm parked in the back off the alley, and I got to walk through the kitchen. He says, "Do you want a cookie?" And at this point, I've developed a bad junk food habit. In addition to becoming an angry dude, I'm going into Kroger every night eating cookies and Triscuits and chips, because that's what every diabetic needs. All I thought was, I won't have to go to Food Lion tonight. I said, "Yes, I'd like a cookie." And he pulls them out of this little bag, and they're little cookies. And I'm thinking, that's an oddly small cookie, and that's all I can only take a hand on. And I started, and he said, "If I were you, I wouldn't eat over a third of that at the time." And now I know the man is handing me a pot cookie. And I'm like, and if I'd been armored up and doing all that stuff in service and sponsoring people and all that like I was before, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. I would have laughed, "Hey, man, I'm in recovery. You keep it, enjoy." Got on out of there. Couldn't do it. I put the thing in my pocket. I take it out. I put it in the console in the vehicle, and I'm riding it around for 3 weeks. And now the obsession is back. I can't think about where I'm going. All I can think about is that cookie is still in the console. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I'm like, I'm going to take it to dogs. I'm going to go down to the big woodland. I know how to get to the secluded area and let them run around. I'm going to go back there and eat this cookie. We'll stop at a third. I'm going to eat the whole thing and be done with it. So I'm walking back there, and this first step stuff starts playing. I go, man, this is not going to end well. I'm going to be calling this guy and that guy. If I don't get them, I'm going to be in the liquor store. If I don't get in there, I'm going to be in the drug, in the supermarket buying beer. I'm going to be hiding it. I'm going to be back in living that horrible double life I had to live so many years as a dad who sat at the table and couldn't even be present for his own kids. So anyway, I said, I just started praying. I'm like, God, save me from this stuff and bring me closer. And had this clarity. I could see how much I was yelling at my kid and puffing around the wife and all this. And I'm like, man, I don't want to live like that. And I look up and I can see the reservoir, sun shining off the reservoir, whatever, 30 yards away or something. So I go down there and I manage to throw the cookie in the reservoir. And it's the same this time of year, and it's ice cold, and I come this close to going in after it. And I came running back, and I came back into AA and went back into action, and that's all reshuffled because a bunch of people had just left the group, and had a nice calmer feel to it and everything. I said, well, I'm just gonna make this my home group. And I started going, you know, like any of these decisions have to have commensurate action to be of any effect in our life. So I just started going. I started doing the treatment center thing. I started doing the Beaumont prison thing, and I'm like instantly better. But I was still just wasn't quite comfortable. So what I did is I started taking it up a notch. I'm like, all right, had a rule. I wasn't going to sponsor whoever and wherever and whenever and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I'm just going to do whatever's in front of me. And when I did, I got better again. So what's happened is this thing that was destroying our family. I was looking around judging people who had lost their family. I was going to be that person pretty soon. I just didn't know it. But this thing has come through and gone through our whole family. My wife been in Al-Anon exactly, whatever, 6 months after I started in AA. So the three kids are doing great. The oldest son's in a lab for a national environmental company. I wrangled out of him at dinner a couple of weeks ago that he's gotten promoted three times in the last year and a half in there. My daughter just graduated nursing school with an accelerated 18-month program at MCV where you get a bachelor's in nursing in a year and a half. She already had a biology degree. So she starts her first job in a couple of weeks. And then her twin brother, and he's got a couple of other issues, but he's doing well. He's graduated school and he's studying for the law admissions test. So he's looking at becoming a lawyer. And then my wife went back as a full-time therapist, went to doctoral school in her 50s, and took 6.5 years to get a PhD. And now she's living her life goal, which is to help form the upcoming occupational therapist. So she's now got an assistant professor at Old Dominion, and they're starting an occupational therapy department from scratch. And she goes down there a couple of weeks, and that's tough. I couldn't have tolerated any of this stuff, you know, with my wife having to put all this time into work in the school before recovery. I just couldn't have handled it. And now I look at it and go, thank God I didn't destroy these people to where they weren't able to do this stuff. And so it's all good. I mean, I get out and walk 3 or 4 miles with the dogs every day and do a little bicycling and keep the diabetes in check. And heart doctor asked me to look at becoming a vegan, and I did that for 1.5 years, and I'm happily back on meat now. Progress, not perfection. But the whole thing has just been more than a guy like me deserves. I mean, it's not that I was a bad person. It's just that I didn't have control over my own life, and I was willing to do some pretty shady things in order to be okay in life. You know, I drove drunk so many times, if there was any justice in the world, I would not be standing here now. I would be in prison from endangering society with just drunk driving so many years. So with all that as a background, I'm just extremely fortunate, you know, and it takes a reasonable amount of time for me to do enough stuff in AA to be okay. And it's not a big deal. I had weeks where I was not sober 1 minute, you know? So I just spent Sunday doing AA. I was like, who cares? I care deeply. I mean, you know, but if I don't do that stuff, I will not be okay. And that stuff will start to go back into my family again. I'm totally convinced of it. So the recovery has kind of planted itself there the same way the alcoholic way of living planted itself there, even among the none of the rest of my family drinks. So anyway, that's what's happened. And thank you for having me tonight.
Yeah.